You're listening to Classic Rock Radio.
Classic Rock Radio, I'm John Kirkman, thanks for listening. That, of course, was Emerson, Lake and Palmer from the Trilogy album, which is, I think it's either just come out or just about to be reissued, and one of my favourite tracks, From the Beginning. And I'm sure that's going to get an airing on a tour that's coming up in November. It's a tour by Greg Lake, and the title of the tour is Songs of a Lifetime. Now, Greg, great to speak to you.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Now, this tour is great. It goes under the title Songs of a Lifetime. But to me, it looks a little bit like an audience with kind of on the road. because it's involving the audience as well, isn't it? You're encouraging the audience as well as to listen to what you're playing and your sort of anecdotes of your life in music. You're encouraging them to sort of share their sort of favorite moments in music, aren't you?
It is a shared experience. I mean, I came across the idea really. I've just finished writing my autobiography, which is unsurprisingly called Lucky Man, and you know, as I was writing it, these songs would pop up, and at the end of it all, I looked at this collection of material, and I realised that what it represented really was a sort of journey that I'd shared together with the audience over 40 more years.
Yeah,
and I thought, wouldn't it be nice? Because of course, with each of these songs. And they're not just songs that I've written. They're songs that have influenced me and were important to me in my life, and indeed important to the audience as well. And I do things like I do Heartbreak Hotel by Elvis.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, you know, because it was in my formative years, it was really important. It's what got me singing, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, behind all these songs, of course, there's a story.
Mm.
And that's my stories, but perhaps more importantly, behind these songs, of course, the audience, members of the audience, have got a lot of really fascinating, and sometimes, I mean, it's just incredible. I never realized just how powerful it was, but, you know, in one evening, I've seen the audience crying and laughing.
Yeah.
Well, it's an incredible thing how people are only too willing, actually, to open their hearts up and share these things together. Mm. And it really is more like a family gathering.
That's actually a really good way of describing the tour, though, because it is a case of connecting with the audience and sort of actually, if you like, locking into their emotions and their memories, isn't it?
It's very much a soul-to-soul thing. And, you know, the thing is, too, I tried, you know, when I thought of doing this, I thought in order for it to be intimate, it really just wants to be a sort of one man, very in small places, very intimate. But the problem with that is, of course, that, you know, these one man shows tend to be a sort of legend in his own lunchtime, you know, boring, sitting on a stool, strumming a folk guitar. And I didn't want that to happen.
No.
So I've purposely gone out of my way to make it a very dynamic, actually, and a highly produced show. And it's very entertaining. The people who've seen it all come away saying, you know, I just had a great time.
You've been in America and you've toured across America, and the reviews have been incredible, haven't they?
Yes, they have. You know, it was very strange, John. Before I left to go on the tour, you know, I thought all this through, obviously, and I've been preparing the music for it for almost a year, actually.
Yeah.
And I got to the just the day before I left, and I sat down on my sofa here, and I said, "What the hell have I done?" You know. Oh no. You know, what if it all goes wrong, you know?
But Greg, this is the man who's played in front of thousands of people in stadiums.
I know, but you know what? there's comfort in numbers. And I think I just had this awful vision of standing up there and people just not liking it, you know. So it was a phenomenal relief when I actually played the first couple of shows, and it just went down fantastic. It really was a revelation, actually. It was really something that was waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things that I'm really glad I did it, because it's brought out a lot of emotion and a lot of rich memories and good times, actually, for people, and most of all me, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because I mean that means that it is definitely a two way thing.
Yes, it is.
I my particular memory, and it was my first memory of ELP, was the Brain Salad Surgery Tour, and we discussed this before we started recording this, and it was just at the Liverpool Empire, you had to saw Carl's drum kit in half and weld it back together, jack up the stage, because it was an incredible show. Yeah. And then you had your roadie came on and vacuumed your Persian rug. It was pure performance, and it was just a great show.
Oh yeah, I mean that was it. That was ELP really. ELP was just one of those bands that there was a chemistry in the band, and it was a combination really of music played with a lot of passion and well considered production and theatrics really. Yeah.
White horses and ladies by the score, all dressed in satin and waiting by the door. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man. They made up his bed, a gold-covered mattress on which he was led.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
You said your first real music experience was Elvis, but for many other people, of course, their first musical experience would have been King Crimson in the Court of the Crimson King, Trilogy or Brain Salad Surgery, or even your solo albums. I know you did another gig in Liverpool at the Royal Court when you had Gary Moore in the band for your first solo album. That was a great gig because I was at that as well.
Yeah, well, no, that was a great band. I mean, Gary's, God rest his soul, he was a fantastic guy.
Yeah.
Fabulous player, lovely man, you know. And, yeah, that was a great band. I've been very lucky, and I've always had a soft spot for Liverpool. I mean, you know, it's just, it's everything, isn't it? It's the music that came from the city. It's just the way the people are. It's one of those towns I always love to visit.
Well, we're quite lucky. We've had one or two popular musicians.
Yeah, just a couple.
I mean, the thing about the American tour, ELP were massive in America. And I mean, we are talking stadiums.
Yes.
How do you work, if you like, condensing what you do in a stadium down into something intimate and something that is very, very emotional on a number of levels? I mean, it must be difficult because it's a whole different deal playing to a stadium with thousands. There's three of you, because on the, as you said, at the other end of the scale, if something goes wrong, you can always say it was his fault.
I think the answer to your question is that I try anyway to transport the audience into almost a dream state. Where perspective is gone, there is no perspective anymore. It's just part memory, part nostalgia, part it happening now. It's not a quiet show, you see.
No. Well, if anyone...
Very dramatic and powerful, actually.
Yeah.
Powerful show from a sound point of view.
If people look at there's a montage on YouTube, and it's not just you and an acoustic guitar. But that you're playing bass, and I mean, the part I also saw was a song that we're going to play in a second. Welcome back, my friends, Carnival 9.
Yeah.
And that's great as well, because I was surprised, because I thought it would be just you on a stool with an acoustic guitar, maybe that. And
That would be great. That is it. And in some ways, it's difficult to get across to people that it's not one of those boring shows, you know.
It isn't.
But I think what happens is the word of mouth spreads, that people see it and they love it, and that's all that matters, really. To me, you know, it's more important that someone is touched or moved by one of the songs. That to me is everything.
But you have written so many great songs and been involved in so many great songs. It sounds like I'm not sort of, you know, pulling your horn, so to speak, as they say in America. But
don't pull my horn.
You know, you have actually made and recorded and been a part of a lot of great songs that have touched a lot of people's lives in much the same way as you've probably been touched by people like Elvis, the Beatles, and people like that.
I've been very lucky, John. That's the truth of it. I was lucky to start young. You know, and I was lucky that my mother bought me the guitar when she did, because if the answer had been no instead of yes, my life would have been entirely different. So, I mean, I think it's partly good fortune. It's all a little bit about, you know, who you meet along the way and how it goes. But I've been lucky, and of course, I've worked hard as well, and I think that combination of things is what accounts for it. But in the end, you're nothing without the audience. I mean, it's them who makes you successful. You are nothing without that, you know.
What do you think it is about artists like yourself that came through in the 60s, massive success in the 70s, and continue to perform now, and people still want to see artists like yourself? What do you think it is that people are latching onto? Because it's not like music stood still. There's plenty of new bands, and yet artists like yourself are still pulling them in off the streets, so to speak.
I think, and I know it might sound a bit corny, but I think honesty is one thing, and a sense of duty almost, that people have paid to see a good show. And I did a tour a few years back with Ringo.
Yeah, they're great tours, though.
They're great tours. And one of the things that really shocked me about Ringo was he was so disciplined.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would have it right. And not only his songs, but if I played one of my songs, it had to be right.
Yeah.
And he would sit up till midnight doing it. And, you know, I realised then that he wasn't that floppy guy that sat at the back, you know.
Shaking his head.
No. He was really a motivator.
Well, I, you know, I'm a bit biased. Ringo's very special. I mean, I'm 54 now. So for me, him and his three mates are a little bit special.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you and your two mates are quite special as well. So, and I know there's lots of people want to see the tour. And it's coming up in November. Now, they can get all the details from your website, can't they? GregLake.com.
Yes, they can, yeah.
Now, what can we expect after the tour? Have you filmed any of it? Because I think it would probably transfer rather nicely to a DVD.
We are going to film it. We are going to film it. But I think what I'm going to do with it is try and make a bit of a documentary. Because, you know, in a way, this is really a live show. It's best experienced live.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like theatre. It's happening right there and then. You know, I was telling you the story about one night when the audience, literally, they were all crying.
Yeah.
And when you're in the middle of something like that, it is very dramatic. And you know, it's different every night. You'll never get the same thing two nights following, you know?
Well, you probably get a different reaction from different people for different songs, because I've always said that music is so great in that sense. A million people can like a song, but they'll probably all like it, and it'll invoke a certain memory for each of them.
Absolutely right. It's a very shrewd observation. I mean, yeah. I do make the point in the show that I don't actually like talking about lyrics, because when I write a song, then it belongs to me. I've written it.
Yeah.
But the moment it comes out on a record and other people hear it, it becomes theirs, their interpretation. It's what it means to them.
Yeah.
And it's no longer good for me to be saying, well, this lyric meant this or it meant that. What it meant to them is what's important.
Well, that's the great thing about music, as I've said. I mean, because it means something to you as well. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do it.
You know, it's a strange thing. Songs change over time. Their perspective changes.
Yeah, but surely that's life, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely it is. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about this show, is that it kind of reveals your own life. In a way, you see your own life. When you hear those songs go down, if you were there for the entire journey, you know, it's like living your life in an evening.
Well, it is, yeah. And I mean, and hence the tears and the laughter. Well, I'm really looking forward to the tour. It's in November. All the details are on your website, greglake.com. And I'm definitely going to come up and shake your hand.
I look forward to seeing you, John.
You've been a big part of my life and so many millions of others. And it's great to see that you're going out and sort of taking the show. And you're right, it does sound a bit corny sometimes. But hey, you know what? We're not here on this planet for long, and I think it's good that we can have some good times and share good times with people.
Absolutely right.
Well, listen, Greg, great to speak to you, and I shall catch you in Liverpool in November.
Look forward to seeing you there, John.
Fabulous.
Bye-bye, man. Take care.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, you'll get your money's worth. With this show, it happened hell at the Yahtzee show. It's a dynamo. Yahtzee show. It's rock and roll. Oh, right before your eyes, we put a laughter from the skies. And he laughs until he cries. And he dies, and he dies.
You're listening to Classic Rock Radio.